oh my God, there's a ghost. It's got glassy eyes. Its mouth is open. It looks like The Ring.
An elevator tape projection.
Hey, welcome. It's us at Taking It Down, where we give you a new angle at looking at television. Taking It Down is produced by the Alabama Take, a family of podcasts, and a site where you can find essays and articles on television, movies, music, books, sports, and even more. We at Taking It Down are me, I'm Blaine, the editor-in-chief of the Alabama Take. We also have a touring musician and former filmmaker, Adam Morrow. We have our specialist in media at a New England college, Mr. Donovan Reinwald. And we have Natalie Morrow, our resident expert in fantasy, sci-fi, comics, trashy reality TV, and plenty of Beyonce. Each week, this podcast is a short video segment featured on the Alabama Takes YouTube channel, where we open the floor for a little more than TV and streaming at times, or just an added TV segment. It's released each Tuesday evening around 5 p.m. Central. Taking It Down itself is audio only and hits all podcast apps, the website, and YouTube bright and early every Tuesday morning. Subscribe or follow in your favorite podcast app, and you won't miss an episode. Talk to you every Tuesday. Here we are, episode 188. It's just me and Donovan on this week. The other two you can see tomorrow. That's right, a quick programming note here. Taking It Down on video has moved, once again, we're playing with some options here, but we've moved to Wednesday evening. That's Taking It Down on video. Wednesday evening at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. A few reasons why we think that lines up better is, I don't know, Donovan, why did we think that?
Well, you know, Wednesday is closer to Sunday. Sunday is the Lord's Day. It's
is that what we were doing? Okay. Is that because it's Ash Wednesday this week?
Was it challenge related?
No, it was challenge related primarily. You know, our YouTube segment has become coverage of the challenge. It's also a place where we drop things that aren't necessarily TV related. It's a little bit looser, not incredibly looser, but very much the same format. It's just on video, and it's taken on a form of challenge discussion. So we decided to move it to Wednesday. It is its own separate entity, and we wanted to treat it as such. And by putting it on Wednesday around 5 p.m. each Wednesday afternoon, that's Central Standard Time on the Alabama Takes YouTube channel, perhaps you would want to watch it, hear our thoughts and coverage of the week before on the challenge battle for a new champion, an hour or two before the actual new episode releases on MTV. Once the challenge is over, we'll continue that schedule, I think, Wednesday around 5 on YouTube, and you can watch whatever it is we get around to. Again, it could be a little looser or different than what happens on the actual audio here. Yeah, subscribe to the YouTube channel. It's on the Alabama Take, our production company. But here we are. Sometimes we do two segments on the audio podcast, sometimes three. Today, just the one. We're back in Alaska, which is really part of the United States. Did you know this, Donovan? Recently added. As recent as 1999. Big year.
Hadn't heard.
Big year. 1999.
I like that this is never going to go out of fashion.
What?
This voice. It's always going to be like that. It's haunting me. Yeah.
It's a horrible Trump impression. My voice, Trump, is not as good as my actual... I should say for YouTube is what I'm saying. I can do some of the characteristics, just not the voice.
If you can master the way he stands, because he always stands as if there's like a stiff breeze behind him.
Yeah, yeah, like he's gonna topple over.
Yeah, yeah, like he's like at an angle.
I've said it 1,000 times. I will compliment the man every now and again, and here's his compliment he will get from me this week. He hides his big belly better than any man. He's got a huge belly, but you'd never know it.
That's true. It's probably because he stands so weird.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know how he's doing it, but you know.
I don't either. True Detective Part 4, but to our surprise, True Detective Part 5 is actually airing. We could have even knocked out 2 and 1. They did that probably because of the Super Bowl competition this week.
This is not relevant, but it's so interesting to me that they do that just because so much of my experience, like I forget, like I don't turn on my TV and go to the HBO channel.
You don't?
I'm watching it on Max or whatever it is.
Right, that's what I do, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, it's such a recorded experience for me. It doesn't, like... But it's like, oh, yeah, like, this is an actual, like, show that doesn't want to compete with the Super Bowl. Because we know that Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce will make everyone's brains explode one way or the other.
Man, I bet the Super Bowl's ratings this year, you know, we come out, we record on Sunday afternoon, so we don't know what's about to happen on the Super Bowl here in a couple hours, but I bet you it's going to be the most highest rated Super Bowl ever because so many Taylor Swift fans are really into the NFL this year and they're pulling for Travis Kelce and the Chiefs.
I have two comments. First off, Taylor Swift fans, more like Taylor Slow. Number two, I already lost all my money betting on the Puppy Bowl.
Oh, man, here he is. He's raking.
I bet on Team Rough, and I should have bet on Team Fluff.
That's a rookie mistake if ever there was one.
I feel like an idiot.
Stick to college football, my friend, where you usually rake in the thousands.
The big bucks.
Yeah, so interestingly enough, if you watched both episodes of True Detective, you would have seen part four and five. We're just covering four here. The epigraph from episode one, for we do not know what beast the night dreams when its hours grow too long for even God to be awake. I've never done this as a host where I just come back to what the season seems to want to be saying. So I'm just, I don't know. That's something to keep us at a focal point.
We're in the night country now.
Nah.
We're
he
all
said
in
it.
The night country.
He said it. Cue the Leonardo DiCaprio meme. Hey, he said it.
Exactly. Yeah, the pointing.
Having a season set in an all dark part of Alaska or part of year in Alaska does need to focus on mental illness, and that is definitely where the last couple of episodes have shifted its focus. And that's where we start this week with.
Yeah, I feel like nobody in Ennis is doing that great once it gets dark.
You gotta wonder if that's really the case.
What do you mean?
In that area.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, there's a reason people there's like a like drug and alcohol problems, right? Like there's only so much you can do when it's dark all the time.
How long does that last?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
Is it 8 or 9 days? Oh, is it really longer than that?
Is it like a month? I thought it was like a month or two. Maybe I'm wrong.
I always assumed it was a month or two as well. And if it, even if it's a full-blown week of darkness, 8 or 9 days or whatever, it's got to be tough.
It would still be pretty intense. Yeah, I mean, it does kind of, this episode does kind of tie back. The delivery driver for this research station said offhand, he's like, you know, it's in us. People see things.
Mm-hmm. Which plays a role in what we're getting at here. The internet itself's in dichotomy. It's this season is way too supernatural, or it's good.
Well, I have said, I think every week between Fargo and True Detective, I've said that I'm a simple man with simple pleasures.
Mm-hmm.
And if you press my little pleasure button.
No comment, but go ahead.
Not too supernatural for me, just enough.
Okay,
yeah,
so
I like how they're. Even if they land on the edge of, like, it is supernatural, I'm enjoying how it is, they're walking the line of, like, it could, like, Navarro has had a shock, like, a real shock.
Mm-hmm. A couple
like,
of them.
Like, why wouldn't she be? Like, everybody has had a real shock.
Mm-hmm.
And it, stuff is coming up.
Navarro has had trauma and has had a case that was horrific with Danvers when they came to the house. And she's had a history of, she's had genetic history of mental illness.
She says it herself, right? It was my mother and it passed to my sister and now that she's gone, it's passing to me.
Pile all that on and some of this makes perfect sense.
This may be stupid in light of the eventual ending though, but I am enjoying, like I'm not going to say that this is like the best thing I've ever seen, but I do like that for me it kind of works both ways, right? Like, there's the legacy of mental illness, and at the same time, she's seeing ghosts. And it's hard to kind of tease out the difference between those two things.
Yeah.
You know, like mental illness, right? Like, it can feel like something outside of yourself.
Uh-huh, absolutely.
In your mind. You know, it is a powerful force. Or I should say, your mind and its functioning or non-functioning. And wellness is powerful. So for me, it's working that like, this could be exterior and this could be interior, and it's really hard to tease those two things apart.
I 100% agree, and I like that the show is jumping back and forth on that line. My complaint is very similar to what the internet as a whole is kind of saying. I do wish it was less Stephen King supernatural and more hinted or like the ghost maybe. Here I am playing director when I have no right to be. I would make the ghost just barely there and less in your face with a jump scare. Like if she turned and there was just a glimpse of something, and you as a viewer had to think, was that something? Like kind of put me in her shoes a little. Rather than just, oh my God, there's a ghost. It's got glassy eyes. Its mouth is open. It looks like The Ring.
Yeah, I could absolutely live with that version of this too.
Right.
I would be no problem.
A little too on the nose, I think, right now. Even if it turns out it's all in Navarro's head and some of the other characters' heads who are living through this darkness or just seem to have it because of Ennis itself. There is this hypothesis that it's the lead or the mercury, I forget which, from the mine that's causing hallucinations. And I find that a very intriguing storyline.
I'd almost be a little disappointed if it went there, but I do think that if it did, it would have been set up and supported, right?
Mm-hmm. It certainly has way more horror tropes this season than ever. Is it that environment in Ennis, Alaska that should create these jump scares? Do the mentally ill in this part of Alaska see the dead in haunting and frightening ways just because of that's the way it is? It's dark all the time. There's a lot of dead people because of the environment that's just harsh.
Yeah.
Again, I have no problem with any of that. It works really well. I love it. It's intriguing. I think it's just the way it's presented is my bother. I'm not bothered by the narrative. I think it's just the presentation is just too, it feels too much like a, what are those movies, The Nun? It feels too much like something like that.
You know, that's funny because I'm sitting here trying to think if I'm bothered by it. I don't think I am really, and that is sort of interesting because I do think that I tend to prefer what you described, like the subtle horror. Like if they'd actually done that, what you described, I would have been like, yeah, this was a great scene. But I think, at least for me, like they set it up with like almost horror trope things happening in the first episode, like the guy shaking, you know, or convulsing, and that I was like, oh, okay, like they're gonna throw a little bit of that in here, and that's gonna be fine. That's part of the show. Or, you know, the corpsicle guy waking up. I can't think of the name off the top of my head. You know, after they break his arm off and he screams.
Lund?
Was that him? I can't remember. Whatever his name was. I don't know any of the scientists' names except Clark.
Yeah, there's Lund, who was the guy who also woke up quickly after sedation to tell Navarro her mom is waiting.
Yeah, says hi.
Yeah. I don't have a lot of problem with it, especially when I'm watching it. It's just that in hindsight, I sort of do.
Sure.
Just seems as if they could have toned it down a notch. Does it hinder me from wanting to watch? Absolutely not. I am desperate to turn into the show as soon as I get a chance, whatever day of the week that tends to be.
This one, and I think again, like I'm a simple man with my simple pleasures. But the end of this, I don't. If you get someone saying something real cryptic and ominous that seems like it has a lot of hidden meaning, like we're all in the night country, like, damn, I want to watch the next episode now.
It does do that.
I wanted to, like, you know, if it's a potboiler and a page turner, well, it's fulfilling that function. I wanted to see the next episode as soon as I finished this one.
Yeah, me too. And we had that opportunity, but I did not take advantage of it. A little late. Part four to me was a little slower. I did find it a little slower. I wanted just a few more things to happen that made sense. Some of it was just me trying to figure out what threads overlapped or needed to be tied together.
Mm-hmm.
How much of this do you have figured out that you're supposed to have figured out at this point?
Mm-hmm. I am, it's maybe that same kind of thing as I was watching it. I did have kind of the back of my head, like, okay, well, we've only got two episodes left. We got still a bunch of stuff to wrap up. Are we going to be able to?
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't, for this one, it didn't unfold super slow for me, but it was kind of like the pace was in the back of my head. I was kind of questioning the pace.
Yes, as was I. The pacing felt a little off for part four. The orange reappears, and it reappears just as Julie finally loses her mind one last time and walks out into the cold, undresses, folds her clothes nicely, and disappears. She sees what seems to be Annie under her bed at the facility she's staying at. Mm-hmm. And all of these dead people that everyone's seeing seem to point at something.
Yeah, so far.
If you want to connect this to season one, Ennis or this very northern part of Alaska could be the origin to some of this evil.
I am curious to see how much they really want to, yeah, how much they really want to tie it in.
Yeah.
Or if they just want to be cute. I don't either. So far, it's just been cute, right? Like, it hasn't really mattered, but could go either way.
There's a beautiful and very short. The reason why it's beautiful, I think, is because it's short-lived. Danvers checks on her stepdaughter as she sleeps.
Yeah.
Before she spray paints the mine's front door, and she pulls her hair back in this ubiquitous signal of care and love, where you pull the hair back to see if she's sleeping.
Boy, Danvers is, you know, I mean, it's kind of a classic, almost like tropey person, but dadgum, she just can't get out of her own way, can she?
No.
Make your daughter, her stepdaughter, I should say, feel like a little valued and appreciated by you, and she might not want to just leave the house.
Spray paint, get in trouble, yeah, get you in trouble as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone hates Danvers because...
Everyone, I do like she's got, like, I think every person except Pryor that she's interacted with is like, wants to kill her. Maybe not Navarro either, but, like, everyone in town has, like, some reason to hate her for one reason or the other.
Mostly because she slept with their husbands.
Yes, she's gotten around.
She's a philanderer.
She is a philanderer.
Is that what you call a lady philanderer?
I think you can be a lady philanderer.
I think so, too.
Those husbands, they were floozies. She's a philanderer.
She had... this show, honestly, though, it makes me chuckle every week, at least once. And this this week a couple times, but one of the main ones was when they go to Adam, the geologist's house, to knock on his door, and as soon as Danvers knocks, she's like, here, you stand in the front.
She's gonna stand behind
and then she stands behind her, and Danvers is small enough to hide, and she also turns away like, I'm not Danvers, I'm gonna turn around.
That made me laugh too. Yeah, was good.
As soon as the wife in her silk pajamas sees her, she's like, did you really have to come here on Christmas Eve? It's important that it's Christmas Eve too.
Yeah, it is kind of sad, although it made me kind of chuckle. And it was kind of sad following up sort of what you said there. It's just like the urgency that Danvers have. Like, it's Christmas Eve. But, like, she has nothing else going on, right? Like, she has nothing else in her head. So, of course, everyone else must have nothing else going on.
Hey, she threw the turkey away.
She did throw the turkey away. And she made the responsible choice and drank vodka instead.
Yeah, when she reached in the freezer, I was wondering what she was going to get. And it doesn't show until the next scene where she's got the absolute vodka bottle. The big version.
The big one.
Causes her to drive over to her colleague's house, her boss. Not for sex, really, this time.
Make fun of his teeth.
More to make fun of his teeth whitening system, which, hey, everybody wants white teeth. Don't shame the man. Nothing says love like rose petals on a camouflage bed.
Oh, man. Has anyone ever been more catfished than Hank?
Oh, we knew it was coming.
The camo was really, really...
The camo was a nice touch.
That was great.
Of course he would have camo. But what do you think about this line of this plot line?
Honestly, don't know, because I mean, like, it's fine and it's kind of funny, but also, like, we'll see how it ties in. And, like, I'm not mad or anything, but, like, did we need the scene of him at the airport, like, waiting, you know? Like, did we? It's fine. It's fun. It's just Hank is sort of a peripheral character. I don't see any reason to really be. I mean, he seems to be more important as, like, Pryor's dad, and it seems like a kind of obstructionist police officer for Danvers than anything about his personal life, really.
Him holding the bunny with the Alaska shirt on was just sad.
poor Hank.
It punched me in the gut a little bit.
Pryor's like, you haven't been sending her money, have you?
And he doesn't answer. Pryor, of course, Hank, of course, drinking Jim Beam.
Oh, yeah.
Look. Jim Beam,
I want a profession where it's acceptable to just have a big old honking, you know, thing of Jim Beam in your drawer.
Well, I don't think it is. I don't think
Who's going to stop him? It's like Mad Men over there.
Exactly. I mean, at least have Jack Daniels. Good God, Jim Beam, so bad. They managed to track down Otis Heiss. They think they're tracking down Clark, one of the scientists, because there's been a picture taken out there in the wilderness close to the dregs. And it's actually Otis Heiss, who's a who's an addict and probably living there and scoring drugs, he has had similar problems and injuries as Lund has with the vision. How does this happen? Is it because of the intense sun during daylight?
They don't know yet, right? But the vision, they said his ears burst. He had the self-inflicted bite wounds.
And Navarro, the episode ends with Navarro's ears bleeding.
Yeah.
As she's sitting by an odd Christmas tree in those dregs.
Hooked up to the car battery that's just hanging around. Yeah, Navarro's having a rough evening, which, fair enough.
Navarro has been beaten up by three men pretty badly.
She lost her sister, you know.
Lost her sister in death. She loses the sister, goes to blame the facility, which is fair. I had a very similar incident this week.
Yeah.
I didn't lose anyone, but I did blame a facility for something, and then I didn't go get beat up. I probably should have. She goes to challenge the guys to a fight because they're assholes. The through line to her is that she cannot stand women being mistreated. And this guy is just a reminder of that.
Because yeah, he was in the first episode.
He's
just like a big old middle finger. He's been a big old middle finger to her around town. Right?
Then gives her an actual middle finger
as she goes by.
Noted domestic abuser, so she decides, if I can't mess up this facility, this is stupid, I can't blame them. You could see the look in her face like, I'm about to go beat the shit out of that guy.
Yeah.
And she perfectly played because you can read it in her face. That's what she's going to do. She turns around, leaves the facility, goes, picks a fight with this guy, but he's got two friends. She could have probably taken him, maybe even two of them. But the third...
I think she was perfectly happy. You know when you ever feel bad on the inside and you kind of want to feel that way? You kind of wish all of you felt that way?
That's exactly what's happening.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I feel... Yeah, it was... I actually, to take a step, at least for me, back from just the straight story, I did think, you mentioned it at the facility, what is her last name? It starts with an R. The actor who plays Navarro.
Carly Rice.
I thought she did a good job of selling, something that is pretty easy to be cliche, right? But these big emotional moments of, I'm having to pull myself back from hurting someone, and I'm hurting, so I'm gonna hurt someone else, and I'm gonna hurt in other ways.
Yeah, she's a boxer initially, and now an actress.
She's good.
Yeah, I have really paid close attention to see how good she is, and she's really only been tasked to play kind of miserable or angry or a little upset. But here, she had to do "I'm changing my mind" without saying any kind of words, and I thought she did it well. And she also. Danvers makes her chuckle a little, and so we get a lighter side, even despite all the darkness.
They have a good dynamic, the two actors.
They really do, which may be why she got cast.
Yeah, they seem to have an affinity for each other, while also kind of not putting up with each other's shit. You know, it's not really that, but it's kind of like a good buddy cop chemistry.
Yeah, their rapport is really good.
You know, yeah, sure. Exactly.
Did you know that the young man who plays Pryor is also not really an actor? I think he's done acting things, but he's more of a musician.
No.
Yeah, I think he's a European musician, maybe DJ kind of thing. I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure.
Interesting. He's been pretty good, too, I think.
Not bad, no.
Especially, yeah, it made me, he makes you kind of want to punch him this episode, as he's pretty mean to his wife.
Oh, yeah.
Who is justly upset at him.
Yeah, she's justly upset, but he's also... just trying to do his job.
He's kind of being... He takes that kind of extra step. He's kind of being a little bit of a prick.
Sure. So they track down Otis Heiss, and he's a junkie. He has on Annie's jacket.
Yeah.
And Clark had it on initially.
In the photograph that we have of Clark.
Walk into the facility in the very first episode, and that is what he's wearing?
Mm-hmm.
When he does the little... seizure, shaking.
Yeah, the convulsions. Whatever, yeah.
Yeah, they thought they had Clark. They finalize. He speaks the words of the show's title, gives us a creepy moment. It's kind of a mess at this point for me, narratively. It's not supposed to be clear. You know, that's fine that it is. It's not supposed to be clear because it's not clear to the characters either. I had a hard time making my mind up about this episode. I enjoyed watching it. But I felt like I needed a piece more, maybe. Something more. Give me a little nugget to go on.
Like, in the, where is this going sense?
Yep.
Yeah.
What about you? How did you feel at the end of the episode?
Like, I wanted to watch the next one, so perhaps, like, I enjoyed it. I mentioned this before, I did kind of feel like there's a lot of stuff still to wrap up, right? Like, we haven't even talked about Holden, who seems right. to be Danvers' kid, and the one-eyed polar bear and all that. So there's another threat. So I guess I kind of would have wanted, like, I need a little signal that you can stick the landing.
Mm-hmm.
Which may sort, I don't think is exactly what you're saying, but I think is like kissing cousins to what you're saying.
Holden is mentioned by name in this episode, paired with someone else's name. Don't they say someone else's name?
I believe
like
so.
Like Jackson and Holden.
It didn't stick for me.
It was very
but
brief.
But the kid did.
They did this in the very first episode when they just started dropping names and you had to hang on and figure it out.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I like that kind of thing. It makes me feel like I'm watching something that's lived in, but... Is it Jackson and Holden? They said you're something to the effect of you're not over so-and-so and Holden, or it's mentioned in that kind of way. So if Holden is probably a son or a stepson, or I reckon who the other person is.
I kind of assumed that it might be Holden's father.
The dad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We don't know.
Could be the dad of Leah. Stepdaughter.
Yeah.
Yeah, who she's tasked to take care of, or at least doing the job there. How's that going to tie in? Yeah, we don't know.
I once again won't say that it's the greatest thing I've ever seen. And there were a lot of moving pieces. And sometimes things are a little implausible, right? Where it's like, wait, with the sister, right? Like, she walks into the sea and like 15 minutes later, the Coast Guard find her body and ID her with no clothes on, you know, or anything.
Or the blue hair.
But it's fine. Works for me. I mean, like, how does the Coast Guard know her from you know, even with the blue hair? How does, you know, the Coast Guard know her from any other blue-haired person in Alaska?
And didn't Annie have blue hair, too?
Yes, she did.
Connection there?
So, all that being said, I found it an enjoyable episode. I think that sometimes what it struggles with, or I don't know if struggle's the right word, like, in clunkiness, it does actually, like, it actually makes up for and just kind of, like, narrative heft where it's like, okay, just, you know, it's still moving forward.
To me, it makes up for in vibe. You can give me all those nighttime driving shots. You know, there are a few of them that are almost Lynchian.
Oh, I was thinking the exact thing. Like, there's a bit where, it's just Rose, I think, this time, or not Rose, Navarro this time. It's snowing and she's on the highway and you can probably see 3 feet in front of her car.
Yep. Yeah. You get the shot from the headlights, which is, you know, that's a really cute way of saying that's about as far as they can see in this case, but you also get the overhead and you can just see the snow drifts and the fog, or whatever you would call it, I guess the vapors from the snow on the highway as they drive through the overhead of that. That's just magnetic stuff.
Yeah. No, I'll agree with you there, Blaine. Like, I think the particulars, you could probably sit me down and get me to admit that some of the particulars aren't working, but, like, the vibe is very good for me.
Hey, I'll say that it took up to part four before I started saying, yeah, this doesn't quite work yet.
Yeah.
We got five and six on this way, so we'll talk about those. We'll talk about five next week. And maybe more. What else is on TV that you're going to be watching?
I got no idea.
Let's finish by talking about a few TV stuff. Well, you and I both watched the Apple trailer, which felt like an old HBO trailer.
It did, yes.
None of those shows are airing yet, but some of them look like bangers.
Yeah, there's some good, potentially very good things in the lineup.
Are you all in on Michael Douglas as Benjamin Franklin?
Please give me this.
I've always kind of been interested in what in the hell he did over in Paris. What was he up to?
Making deals and fornicating.
Yeah, exactly. I know. That's what I'm saying. Give me all that you got. There's another one, also another historical bit of drama, Manhunt and the search for John Wilkes Booth after he kills Lincoln.
Also super fascinating. I'm wondering how you do a whole series about it, because they actually caught him pretty quickly. But, like,
exactly.
The drama of it is really interesting.
And it just looked good. You know, the pieces looked of time period. What else was on there? Constellation?
Yeah.
It looked, it's set in space. It's coming soon in about 9 or 10 days. It could be good. We don't know. Is Apple becoming HBO? That's a question, huh?
There's definitely been stuff on there that it's like, this seems okay. But, like, they also seem like they've thrown their their cash behind some, like, narratively hefty stuff. And also stuff that I'm, like, kind of intrigued by. Like, it's, we'll see if they don't pull the plug on it. But, like, For All Mankind, which was one of their launch shows, has seemed just, like, perpetually fascinating to me. And I'm glad they've given those people the time and money to create as much as they have.
Yeah. Here's one that might intrigue all of us here at the show. Sugar. It's like a noir with Colin Farrell.
Yeah, in LA.
Yeah, I know. It might scratch that Perry Mason itch that we're going to be missing.
So. I was thinking just the other day, what a shame it is that what's his name, David Zaslav, cut that one.
Pissed me off. The Big Door Prize is returning for a second season. I watched that first season and I thought it had its ups and downs, but it was okay. I can see that they would want to do a second season of that. The show Dark Matter coming on Apple TV. What do you know about it?
Nothing.
Other than it's a Natalie Portman show?
Yeah, that's all I know. I like Natalie Portman. I think
she usually signs up for good things, right?
She does, yeah. She has a pretty... Every once in a while, she's in something kind of clunk. Every once in a while, she's in Garden State. But other than that, she's pretty good.
Hey, I like Garden State.
Yeah, Garden State's fine.
Jake Gyllenhaal in Presumed Innocent looked intense in the 2 seconds you see of it. And I like a murder whodunit who didn't do it. If it's high quality, not your Law and Order stuff, but okay. The one I'm most interested in, actually got confused. The Natalie Portman show is not Dark Matter. It's going to be called something else.
Okay.
It's a 1960s piece called The Lady in the Lake, where she's, I think a black lady has died and she becomes involved or interested, maybe journalist type thing. And hey, that sounds interesting. I love a show set in the 60s too. The Dark Matter is actually the one that might have my attention the most. It's an apocalyptic piece, and that has my attention if it's well done. But Joel Edgerton stars in it with Jennifer Connelly, and I am just the biggest Joel Edgerton fan ever. I don't know why. That guy just, I love watching him act. Some of those are probably going to be on our radar now. None of them are releasing anytime soon except for the one that's going to be out in like 9 days. That one, the first on the docket is Constellation. Who knows? I might watch it. We don't know much information about these shows other than Apple released this cute little HBO-esque trailer with all of them in it, like HBO used to do.
They're making the they're making the hard sell for your $5.99 or whatever it is.
Yeah, it used to be $5.99. I hope it still is. If so,
I don't remember.
Could be worth it, and we could cover some. I'm just kind of open to whatever we should be talking about each week. So listeners, if you made it this far and you have ideas, then let us know. I mentioned Expats on Amazon Prime. It's supposedly a critical darling, but I have yet to put eyes on it.
Same.
Donovan, you got any final thoughts? Any final goodbyes? You want to shout out anyone? Ash Wednesday's tomorrow. You want
to
say things?
Ash Wednesday. I hope y'all are sinning tonight and sorry tomorrow.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, if you haven't heard that Elvis Perkins album, Ash Wednesday's fantastic.
I haven't thought about that album in a million years.
I think of it every year on Ash Wednesday.
That's a very, very good album.
Powerful stuff. See everyone next week. For Donovan, I'm Blaine, and we'll talk to you later.